on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today is Friday, June 20th, 2025. Now, for those of you who were fortunate enough to have yesterday off, like I was, I hope you had a very relaxing day. A day with your friends, a day with your families, mostly just a day to rest. Because I understand it can be a lot to constantly be involved with everything that is going on around us. But just because it's a lot doesn't mean it's too much, because it's critical that we pay attention, that we understand what is happening in the world. Because without fundamentally understanding what is happening, how could you possibly understand where we are going? And that is the key to investing. Now, we here at Invest Talk hope that our show, our daily show, helps to illuminate some of the uncertainty, helps to impart a little bit of knowledge, and helps you just a little bit on your journey to becoming a better and more informed investor. Now, in order to do that, we have a mixture of educational and actual items. But most importantly, we have you, the listener, you, the viewer, your finance and investment questions. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics that I have for you. But let's tackle this caller question now.
Hello, this is James from Georgia. Big fan of the show. I was trying to call you guys about ticker symbol PM, Philip Morris. I've been holding this. It's really up for me. And is this a good time to trim it? If you could please run down this stock for me, I'll listen to the show. I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you.
Philip Morris, ticker PM, old storied company, very solid history of paying dividends. They're a tobacco company. That's how they were founded. But now they also have branched out into smokeless tobacco nicotine delivery, if you will. And so one of their most popular growing segments is their smoke-free product, which now makes up 38% of their revenue. The growth in sales of Zyns, which are nicotine pouches, it's a smokeless alternative, has really propelled their stock price. They've had organic growth in an industry that has been around for a very long time. Earnings per share was up 24.6% year over year in Q1 2025. Smoke-free products made up 42% of Q1 revenue, with 20% revenue growth and 33% gross profit margin. That is phenomenal. And so because of that, you're seeing shares hit a record high. The relative strength since the middle of 2022 has been outstanding. It's up 81.12% the past 52 weeks, up 52.3% year to date, up 20% over the past 3 months. Now, based upon where it has been, it's a little expensive, 23.3 times forward-looking earnings, 24.5 times cash flow. But I mean, it's understandable why it has in the upper end of its five-year range, given the actual just organic growth. Now, we do get Q2 results in July. I expect them to be positive. Earnings has been consistently upgraded. Cash flow is growing at a solid clip. They're a $284 billion company that only has $46 billion in debt. And I don't know if you've heard me say this, but my gosh, the growth. And so we actually own this for clients. We very much like Philip Morris. It's one of those names that has been phenomenal on the growth side, but also on the dividend side. So we continue to hold it. We continue to like it. That's Philip Morris International Inc., ticker PM. All right, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And here's a little bit of what we have planned for you all. My main focus point concerns this topic: using ratios to determine if a stock is over or undervalued. Investors can use financial ratios to quickly assess whether a stock is over or undervalued relative to industry peers and relative to its own intrinsic value. We'll also touch on a story out of the Federal Reserve. We got some members of the board suggesting that rate cuts may come as soon as July. We're also going to go over that story I've been trying to touch on all week about the reasons why you should keep your politics out of your investing. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on tanker rates and how they are through the roof as ship owners are staying away from the Strait of Hormuz. We also have some questions ready to play, including one on Unum Group, ticker UNM, and another on the Vanguard Energy ETF, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube. And of course, I welcome your finance investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We're heading into a short break, and on the other side, we'll touch on today's market activity. If you feel like talking to me live before the weekend, you got that burning question, feel free to give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com. Code INVEST for 15% off.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks mostly lower across the board. The Dow, though, getting some positivity there. Up 8 basis points. S&P 500 down 22, NASDAQ down 51, Russell 2000 down 17. S&P ended the week a touch lower. NASDAQ was modestly higher over the past 5 trading days. But for Friday, big tech headed downward. Google, the notable decliner, while Apple, who's been struggling relative to the other 6 of the Mag 7, solidly higher on the day. Other underperformers included semis, chemicals, pharma, tobacco, and dollar stores. Outperformers included banks, home builders, tech hardware, insurers, and grocers. Treasuries were a bit firmer, saw some bull flattening, on the curve. Dollar index down 20 basis points, gold down 70 basis points, crude oil up just about 0.5%. Honestly, not much in terms of directional drivers on the day. The Middle East tensions, probably still the biggest main area of focus, but we didn't really see much in terms of updates today. Yesterday, the president did float the hopes of diplomacy, maybe. He does love the number 2 weeks, always given just 2 weeks before decisions are made. He said, well, a decision whether or not to join in an offensive campaign will be coming in the next 2 weeks. Reuters had a headline today noting Iran ready to discuss limitations on its uranium enrichment. So again, some positivity there. But in spite of that, the market mostly just shrugging that off. People still concerned about the possibility for U.S. military involvement. Nothing really new on the trade front. I think we are getting to the point where we are nearing the end of the 90 days since Liberation Day. That should be coming sooner rather than later. From the reconciliation bill, well, headlines continue to highlight Medicaid spending cuts, state and local tax deductions, and clean energy credits. Big sticking points that, remember, this bill, once it's reconciled, does have to pass the House again. Ahead of next week's policy testimony from Chairman Powell, the Fed focus remains on political pressure to cut rates. Fed's Waller increasingly mentioned as a potential Powell successor. Out again today saying, well, maybe July is the time to cut. From a macro perspective, we got June Philly Fed Manufacturing Index printed a negative 4, so it did hold steady, unchanged from May. What else did we have today? The employment index decreased, as did the prices paid component. Looking ahead to next week, U.S. flash PMIs and existing home sales are scheduled for Monday. House price data, conference board, consumer confidence, and Richmond Fed manufacturing will be out on Tuesday. Wednesday brings us new home sales, initial claims, durable good orders, final Q1 GDP, and pending home sales. That'll be on Thursday. And lastly, rounding out the week next week on Friday, personal income and spending report, which includes core PCE inflation. All righty, let's keep things moving. Looks like we got a live call from Steven in Seattle who has a question about ARL. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
No, I already own it, and it's ARM. Sorry,
ARM. I wrong. Oh, no worries. ARM.
Yeah, arm hold.
So what's your question? Yeah, you looking to see if you should trim or buy more? Or?
Honestly, I'm trying to see if it's a good longevity play. I got in around 110, and I got a nice position. Nothing too big, but I got enough to possibly keep adding to it. And I just think if you wondering if what do you think about a longevity play for this one?
Yeah, so that's a great question. ARM Holdings has had a pretty solid 2-year run, right? It IPO'd in 2023. 2024, it outperformed the industry by 93%. It really had a big run-up back when SMCI was running up, and the reason why is because ARM Holdings is involved in the semiconductor space. So they license their CPUs, GPUs, and NPU designs to smartphones, to AI data center platforms, and they've had a lot of revenue growth since they've started trading, right up from $3.2 billion to $4 billion in just 1 year, projected to have another nearly 20% in revenue growth coming in to 2025. And their margins are solid. You see that in a lot of these semiconductor names, a lot of tech names, especially in this space where the designs and the hardware are so integrated that there's a lot of pricing power for these companies. Net margin in 2025, 19.8%, projected to be 39.8% this year. Now, one issue is potentially the guidance has been adjusted downward in the past couple months. And the reason why is, well, there's a little soft outlook economically. The thing you have to understand about the semiconductor industry, it is incredibly cyclical. And names like ARM that for the most part piggyback off of a lot of other technologies and are predicated upon CapEx spending within this area continuing and don't really have as much wiggle room as some of these large names, well, they can asymmetrically suffer. It's down 10%, 9.78% over the past 52 weeks, up 17% though year to date. One issue I have here again is understanding the cyclicality. It's incredibly expensive. trading at 22.6 times price to book, 391 times cash flow. A lot of these names are pricing in a very Goldilocks scenario of not only spending continuing, but it being essential that these large energy intensive, GPU intensive models are far more efficient than more specialized small ones. Keep in mind as well, right, you got increase in tensions between the U.S. and China. If the U.S. continues to maybe peer its eye over the Middle East, what does that do in Asia? Does China move towards Taiwan potentially? So you have a lot of issues here that over the short term can lead to some volatility, but your question's about a longevity play. Here's the thing, right? If you can stomach the cyclicality here, companies like ARM are solid investments over the long, long term. But understand if you're trying to continue to hold here and not take some profit, it's really, really, really darn expensive. Nearly the most expensive it's been in terms of price to cash flow. So if you're up, I would trim. I would understand the cyclical nature of the semiconductor space and hopefully look to diversify my portfolio from there. Thanks for the call. Now, I want to briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. This week in the Insights section, we discuss the most recent Fed meeting. What was Powell talking about? What are the other governors talking about? What does the White House want? And why does it all matter? In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a tool and hardware manufacturer, as well as a heavy equipment rental company. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on cost segregation. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday afternoons. Look at that. We've already accomplished talking about the market. We've accomplished answering two questions, one live call. We gave you the newsletter. Things are rolling here on this beautiful Friday. So before we head off into the weekend, we still have a lot more work to do, including my main focus point, some talking points, and hopefully more of your live calls. We're moving into a break and still to come, my main focus point. But most importantly, your questions. I encourage you to call now. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
So oftentimes you find a company and you don't even know where to start. But one of the most important aspects of investing is understanding whether a stock is over or undervalued. And there's many ways to go about that. Now, one of the easiest ways for comparison is looking at financial ratios. Now, it's not to say that all you need to do is look at these ratios and that'll tell you everything you need to know. But as with most things in life, it is one of many components that can help you ground yourself a little bit. And so we're talking here about intrinsic value. And intrinsic value is calculated most often by a deep dive of fundamental analysis. And oftentimes it diverges from what the market price will be because so much goes into a market price. And so one way to, along with doing analysis, understand if something is under or overvalued is look at these ratios, right? And so we're going to go over some of these ratios right now. The first, price to earnings. This is comparing a stock's price to, you guessed it, its earnings. A high price to earnings implies that something may be overvalued, but it also suggests a lot of optimism that earnings will grow far into the future. The opposite, low-priced earnings can signal some trouble. Going off of this is also the PEG ratio, price to earnings growth. What it does is it adjusts your PDE for growth. A PEG under one often suggests undervaluation, but accuracy really depends on the forecast of your growth rate. There's also price to book. That's looking at the market cap value of your shares relative to the book value of your assets. This is what the research by Fama and French three-factor model looked at to determine value stocks and growth stocks. So a lower price to book means you're paying less for the assets, and a higher price to book means you're paying more for them. There's also price to dividend, reflecting how much investors are willing to pay for $1 of dividends. Best used for comparing dividend stocks over time, but also to other dividend stocks as well. Then there's price to sales, right? If you want to understand for a company that has negative earnings, how much you're pricing revenue, well, price to sales is a good multiple to look at. Enterprise value to sales, same thing. Now you're looking at the value of the company and its debt relative to those sales figures. Most useful, once again, for companies that aren't yet profitable. This is a huge mix of a lot of ratios. These are not the only ones. These are just some of them. The key here is when you use these things, understand what they're saying. In isolation, they don't mean much. When you start comparing them to company peers, when you start comparing them to sector as a whole, when you start comparing them to the company's historical averages, when you start comparing them to your expectations and what the market is expecting, then you can start to understand a little better how over, under, or fairly valued a company may be. Just as a note, historically, the average trailing PD has been 14 to 16 for the S&P 500. As of Q1, recent levels, like in Q1 22, was 25.5 times. Obviously, since then, there has been significant growth. That's just to say this isn't the only thing you should be looking at, just one piece of the puzzle to understanding the value of a company. All right, looks like we're going to go to a voicemail for another question.
Hey guys, love the show. Thanks for everything you guys do. I had a question about Coca-Cola. Had shares of this for years now. Wanted to get your guys' take on the, you know, the infrastructure of Coca-Cola. Thank you so much. Bye.
All righty, let's take a look at Coca-Cola Corporation. That is ticker COKE. And I am sure that everybody knows about Coca-Cola. They're a large beverage brand. They sell water, juices, sports drinks, makes up about 95% of their business. Over the past 52 weeks, they're up almost 10% at 9.56%. Over the past 3 months, they're down about 18.44%. I believe I'm actually looking at the wrong ticker here. Give me a moment. Yeah. I was looking at the wrong ticker here. We want KO, not COKE. We're looking at KO is the ticker. Now, this is the same company. It operates through the following segments: Europe, Middle East and Africa, Latin America, North America, all over the globe. The revenue growth, pretty solid for a business that's been around this long, up 4.6% on an annualized basis going back over the past 6 years. Net margin, also stellar, 22.7% last year. 26.5% is where it's projected to go this year. Forward-looking price to earnings, in the middle of the pack, about 22.5 times forward-looking price to earnings, 11.4 price to book value. Again, from a valuation perspective, multiples we just talked about, pretty middle of the pack compared to where it has been. There are a lot of risks though, right? We have FX headwinds, which could hurt revenues. You have this potential from a regulatory perspective to not allow SNAP benefits to be used, so revenue possibly on the decline. But overall, we've seen, even though this health trend has been going for a couple years, and certainly strong for a couple years, that Coke continues to power through in terms of revenue. This is a name that pays a solid dividend, 3%. It's not going to grow in a crazy way, but if you're looking for an established company that has not that much debt, Coca-Cola could be the name for you. That's Coca-Cola, ticker KO. Looks like we're headed into a break, and on the other side, we'll talk about my main focus point. Stay with me here at InvestTalk.
This is a special InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
Now, from time to time, we also receive InvestTalk questions via email. We haven't answered an email one in so long. I didn't even know we had these anymore, guys. This one says, we've been investing for 25 years, and this is the first time we've done a panic sell. It says, hello. My husband and I panicked this week and put in orders to sell when the market opened on Monday over 1 million in stocks. We're just so unsure of what's happening. We're feeling like we should have done that in order in early January just to write off the volatility with some more peace of mind. However, now due to the fact that the market's back up, we should not have acted on that panic. We've lost $130,000. What do you suggest we do to recoup the loss? And just so you know, we've been investing for 25 years and this is the first time we've done a panic sell. We only sold from our Roth IRA and 401k, and we hope to start taking money out of those accounts in 10 years. We're both 50. Thank you so much. This is the most difficult part about investing, is that the stakes are real. And when you are in your 50s, or you are 50, not only are the stakes real, but the stakes are close. And so it is understandable when tensions start to heighten, that you get scared. But that's part of the discipline of understanding and taking the long view. Now, I would say maybe part one of this stands from, and I don't know how large your total account is, that when you're in your 50s, you should be starting to move more towards capital preservation because you need it sooner, and less towards an all equity allocation. And so if you were pretty much all in stocks, if your entire portfolio is in stocks, well, then the first step is to understand the glide path of retirement investing and shift that allocation, which should in turn, in times like these, take a little worry off of your mind. Now, that is how to prevent the problem. That is one of the reasons why a lot of people use financial advisors, right? Is because the idea is to have somebody who has a fiduciary duty to you who can help in times of stress and times of worry, keep your eye on the goal and the reasons why you are doing what you're doing. Now, going forward, I think that you learned an unfortunate lesson that I'm so sorry that you had to learn, which was understanding that if you take the long-term view in markets, volatility tends to be just a blip. Now you have 10 years left, probably 15 years left. Or no, sorry, you're taking out money in about 10 years. That is a very, very long time to start to try and recoup some of that lost capital. And so it's like somebody the other day who mentioned that they were in all cash. In times of volatility, dollar cost averaging back into the market can be your best friend. Because it's hard and it's scary because, again, the stakes are really real. But understand, first and foremost, over the long term, markets tend to be positive. Anytime you're thinking of doing something emotionally, take a deep breath, zoom out, realize what you've always done and why you're doing. Thanks for the email. Let's dive right into our InvestTalk YouTube question bank. I hope by now you've gone and checked out our YouTube videos. Originally, way back when we first started it, we were posting the podcast, but in video form. Now, we pick and choose what we post. We have a market wrap-up segment, we have a caller question segment, and we have a focus point segment. You can go in, watch it what you want to see the charts we show for the questions. I like it. I think you'll like it. You should go check it out. And while you're over there, if you have a question, feel free to leave it in the comments section of one of our videos. This one on tariffs in China. And it says, how are tariffs on China going to affect Vietnam? My thesis is that they would benefit Vietnam, but I'm reading that some analysts think it could actually negatively affect Vietnam's rapidly growing GDP due to trade policies becoming more strict with the current administration. I own VNM and was thinking about adding to my position. So this is an interesting one. And I think it's shows essentially the effect of tariffs and how it can benefit certain countries. If you are having a targeted tariff on China, be it for national security reasons or other reasons, people who use the supplies, whose supply chains run through China, are more likely to move it to another country like Vietnam or like India, where it is slightly more expensive. Perhaps the quality, the manufacturing quality is slightly lower, but still far less expensive than moving it back to the US. And so if this trade war continues, if it develops, if it worsens, certainly I think that countries like Vietnam will probably stand to benefit a little bit. Now, it could be the case, given that the president is also threatening tariffs on Europe, that in turn he could threaten tariffs on Vietnam, because I think the general thesis here seems to be he has a fundamental belief that trade deficits are bad. And so if you start importing a lot more from Vietnam than you're exporting to Vietnam, that increases your trade deficit. Well, then maybe tariffs will be slapped on Vietnam, but that would be a down the road thing. I think the immediate benefit, before anybody starts reshoring manufacturing or industry supply chains back to the United States, is to pick these companies, or rather these countries, like Vietnam, like Mexico, like South American countries, like India, where we don't have historic competitive battles in the national security realm, in the military realm, in the manufacturing realm. I think a lot of these countries could stand to benefit should the tariffs become worse. Thanks for watching.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where each Friday, subscribers to the KPP Premium newsletter receive a concise and highly informative summary of the week's financial and investment news sent directly to their inbox. It really does give you a week that was roundup in a quick read. It also offers a look ahead and various process and term explanations that will be interesting to every investor. So you should be thinking about subscribing. You'll get targeted value formatted for fast consumption when you become a KPP Premium newsletter subscriber at investtalk.com. The InvestTalk Radio and podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. Kayla here from Seattle, Washington. And we're coming up here at the end of the second week of April right now. And I was just curious what you guys are doing with your oil positions that you have. If, you know, we're potentially coming up on some slower economic growth, are you guys holding? Are you guys planning to like find a good place to sell some off? If you could let us all know what you guys are doing with your oil positions, that would be great. Thank you for all that you do.
That is a great, great question. And so what you see on the screen, if you're watching at home, is the VanEck Oil Services ETF. It pretty much is just going to track the price of oil, which is why you see this stiff drop off over here towards the end of this chart, and then some sort of consolidation over here. Now, the question becomes a risk mitigation framework when you construct portfolios. And so I'm of the opinion that generally speaking, no matter the market environment, you want some sort of exposure to various industries, various sectors, especially ones that are so important for economic growth like oil is. Now, we did trim oil positions at the highs before all this happened, but that's just because we had an overweight position to energy. And as you get above target weights, well, then you start to trim stuff down. And so now we're in a situation where what we were holding is obviously worth less because of where the price of oil is moving. And so if you're a long-term investor, you can see how quickly things can shift and things can change, right? Go back to July over here, the far left end of the screen, like how quickly this move happened, right? And so you run the risk of being left behind should the realities not meet the expectations of where global demand has moved. And so what I like to say is, in situations like this, in times like these, you should still maintain some exposure to what you have in your portfolio, what your thematic exposure, what the macro is telling you, what everything's telling you. I just kind of contract the rules and how stringent we are in how loose beyond, or rather how strict the criteria is for the companies that we're holding. And so for our oil exposure, we're definitely going to hold on to those names that are reliable names that have had good growth, good long-term growth potential, good cash flow, strong balance sheets. None of that changes. So for now, we're holding on to these names at the weights where they are. Certainly, again, things tend to move pretty quickly. And if you're a long-term investor, lows like this are good times to pick up exposure. Thanks for the call. Let's keep things moving and play a fresh caller question now.
I had a question about investing for my kids' future. I have a family member that wants to give all three of my boys a lump sum to help them with college. And we looked into 529 plans, and our worry is that if they don't go to school, then they'll be penalized and then still pay taxes. So would we be better off just doing a taxable account for them that, yes, they'll pay some taxes, but at least then we can invest in what we'd like to instead of being limited like some of the 529s are with what you can invest in? I don't think we could do a Roth or anything because that would have to wait till retirement. So just maybe there's something else we're not thinking of that would be a better option. Look forward to hearing it on the podcast. Yes. Thank you. Bye.
This is a great question. And again, interestingly enough, something that, you know, I was asked with a conversation with a client today. And that was about, I think, you know, what is, I think, one of the best savings vehicles for your kids. And that is the 529 plan. There are tax benefits to helping them save for qualified educational expenses. And so the first thing you got to know about 529s is you don't necessarily have to live in the state whose plan you use. A lot of people prefer the plan that Utah has because it has a wider set of investment options, right? 529s are generally limited. You can't just go out there and buy individual stocks. It's whatever ETFs funds happen to be in the plan. And so that's why a lot of people use plans from that state. Now, one thing to know is since, when was it, 2022, you can now roll unused 529 plans into a Roth IRA under specific conditions. And so those conditions are a lifetime limit of $35,000 per beneficiary. It must be open for at least 15 years. There's also some contribution limits, right? Including, you know, how much you're allowed to contribute in general to a Roth in a given year. And that the beneficiary has to be the same for the IRA, the Roth, as was for the 529. And so I think that is helpful because, yes, you are constrained. It can only be for education expenses, related expenses. But should you have leftover funds or should you not use it for an education? There's still optionality there, right? You don't have to necessarily pay penalty. So with that being said, if you were to have the same amount of money in a 529 and a brokerage account and you weren't to use any of it or roll any of it over, it is true, you'd be about 10% worse off by using the 529 than a brokerage account. But I just think if you are more than 60% sure that they can use this for education expenses, be it college, be it vocational training, a lot or, you know, a wide array of options, or at least be able to roll it over into that Roth down the road, I think that going with a 529, because of its benefits, because of its flexibility, you can change beneficiaries, generally if you need to. Because of all of this, I think generally going with the 529, as long as you're fairly certain that they might need it for educational expenses, is the way to go. Thanks for the call. We may not have time to answer this whole question, but I will try. It is from our YouTube comment section. It's on Roth IRAs and a regular brokerage account. It says, "Hello, InvestTalk. I'm 50 years old with two accounts, Roth IRA and regular brokerage. When does it make sense to choose one account over the other when buying securities? I think of both accounts as retirement accounts and expect to hold all positions for 1 to 4 years, regardless of the account used." That's a great question. And so Roth IRAs have the benefit of being after-tax dollars, and you are not taxed on the gains. There are income limits for which you can contribute to them, though a lot of people use the backdoor method. And so if you are investing in securities that tend to spit off a lot of tax implications, that's what a Roth account is perfect for. In your brokerage account, well, you probably want to be more invested in ETFs or securities that are more tax efficient. Understanding the difference between your traditional IRA, your Roth IRA, your brokerage account is something that we call tax diversity. And so knowing which securities best fit in each one can help you maximize the tax efficiency and maximize your after-tax returns.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
I would really appreciate if you could give me an entry point for a company called Medtronic, MDT.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART, or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
Hello, big fan of the show. I just wanted to see what kind of economic reports or indicators you guys use to see what kind of a market environment we're in. Thank you.
That is a great question. because there's a lot of indicators out there and you can't really rely on any single one. It would be nice if you could, but there's a lot. And some of the most important ones I think that we and other practitioners focus on are GDP growth and estimates, inflation, PCE. Obviously, the Fed cares a lot about that. CPI and PPI, a little bit less. They tend to be lagging indicators. Unemployment and jobs reports. Business surveys are really important too, right? When you want to understand how the economy is moving, talking to CEOs, managers, giving you ideas of their feelings of their particular sectors and industries is very helpful as leading indicators rather than lagging indicators. We talked about the importance of, and we'll continue to talk about the importance of, the bond market. What is the bond market saying? What is the term premium look like? What does the yield curve look like? Again, I wish it was easy that we could just say, okay, one, two, three, four, five, these are going to tell you. We put it in a nice little formula, tells you what the answer is. But I think the general lesson is understanding all these indicators and what tends to lead and what tends to lead versus lag. It can help you get a better understanding of where we are in the current market environment.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Hi, gents. How's it going? My name is Raphael from Chicago. Just had a question about my Roth IRA. I'm trying to see how many stocks I should have on my portfolio. Right now, I have quite a few. I have about 20, 25. It's only about $20,000. So I've seen some kind of mild gains on some mild losses, but I'm just trying to find the sweet spot of how many stocks I should really have. Thanks. Bye.
You're right in that sweet spot. No less than 15, no more than about 30, 35. No more than 5% of your portfolio in any one stock when you buy it. We use 3%. That means 33 stocks, basically. It depends on how, if you can keep track of them. So you're kind of right there in that 20 stocks. But what you got to do is make sure it's like not 10% in this stock and 1% in that stock. No, they need to be, when you buy them, you kind of want to be even, okay? Equal amounts in each one. And then you just rebalance as time goes off because you're going to have, because you're going to have winners and losers, obviously, but you rebalance every so often.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Stephen, Justin. This is Vamsi calling from DC area. Love your show. Been listening to the show over a year now. I had a question regarding the IPOs. I am really interested in a few of the companies which are planning to go public this year. And I've been tracking a few last year. By the time I would wanted to invest in it, the stock or the share price doubles, and then there is a lot of volatility. So the share never really sells at the price that they intend to sell. It always jumps way higher than I expect. So is there a way to get to that pool of pre-IPO where I can buy before it becomes public? Thank you.
Okay, so an IPO, initial public offering, very often spikes when it first comes out. And if it does, you're not ever going to get it at the offering price because that's a hot IPO and many of those are, you know, they only the big institutions get those prices. You're never going to get them. If you ever get offered an IPO at the IPO offering price, that means it's not a very good IPO. Don't do it. Don't do it. Can you buy companies before they become IPO? Yeah. You can invest in companies. Many times they have investment rounds of smaller companies, but they're very, very high risk. So you're probably not going to get to any of them. We're going to go to Jimmy in San Ramon. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, Steve. I'm a new listener.
Great.
New to this whole investing thing. I actually have a investment set up with my union, but I've been looking to spend maybe $1,000 and get into my own stocks, building my own stuff, and I was wondering what you thought would be a good one to get into with that smaller amount of money.
Well, just to let you know, we can answer questions, but I can't give you recommendations. How old are you?
24.
This is a great time to start thinking about it because the market over time will give you, 10%. That's what it's done over time for the last 7,500 years.
Mm-hmm.
10% return. The question is, a lot of people don't get that return because they have no clue what they're doing. One of the problems that most people do have is they let their emotions get involved with their decision making.
Mm-hmm.
When they see their prices are going down and the stock market's crashing, they get out. You gotta look longer term. When they see the market going up and just up, 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 they put more money into it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, if you really wanna be successful, when you are at your saddest and you feel like you just wasted money putting in the market, that's when you put more in.
Uh-huh.
And when you're at your happiest, that you're making a ton of money over the years, and look at this stock, my stocks went up the last 6 months to 100%. Sell. Take it out. Take some profits. You play your own emotions that way, you'll be a lot better off. So the one thing you need to do is figure out how to evaluate stocks, how to determine whether this is a stock that's overpriced or is this stock on sale.
Uh-huh.
Stick with the price of stocks that are on sale, but at the same time, those same on-sale stocks, you want to be in an uptrend on a chart. In other words, the stock has been moving up consistently for a while. That's how you pick stocks.
Uh-huh.
If you give me a call, I will be happy to give you some value methods that are not very difficult.
Uh-huh.
And then on the websites, there's a ton of places. One of the easiest way to evaluate a stock, and I'm going to give it to you right now, is take next year's growth rate of a stock, multiply that times its earnings estimates by the experts for next year. Remember, the stocks look forward, not backward. So if the earning for next year is going to be $1 per share, it's always a per share issue. If the earnings is going to be $1 per share next year and it's growing at 20% a year, multiply 20 times $1 and the stock price fair value is about $20.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Great.
Good luck, and you'll love it. I started at 21. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.